Hi, welcome to Colonial Williamsburg, past and present. The stuff is new, and you won't hear it anyplace else. This is Behind the Scenes, where we let you meet the people who work here. That's my job. I'm Lloyd Dobbins, and mostly I ask questions. This time, I'm asking Ken Schwartz, and at Colonial Williamsburg, he's a blacksmith. What does a blacksmith do at Colonial Williamsburg?
Blacksmiths work with iron and steel. So with those raw materials and a fire, we'll use the fire to soften iron and steel and a hammer and an anvil to hammer the material into useful shapes.
Okay. What's a useful shape?
Useful shapes include tools for other tradesmen, household utensils, things like fireplace equipment, cooking implements, tools for agriculture, plows, hoes, rakes, harrows, wagon and carriage hardware. It's really almost an endless list.
I haven't heard horseshoes.
Horseshoeing was sometimes part of a blacksmith's business, but in an urban setting like Williamsburg, you find that as a specialized trade, a farrier's trade. Mm-hmm. In a rural area, it wouldn't be uncommon for a blacksmith to include horseshoes as part of the work.
How many blacksmiths are there?
Within our shop, we've got 5 full-time blacksmiths. Within the United States, there are probably thousands, many of them doing the work as a hobby. The professionals in the blacksmithing world probably number about 100.
As a hobby, let's see, you've got a fire, so you're hot all the time. Except in the winter when you'd be cold because the fire isn't big enough.
That's right.
That doesn't sound like a very nice hobby.
I think a lot of people that work in offices and at desks really feel the need to do something physical and creative in a material way to interact with a material like iron and see a physical result of their efforts. And it's become very, very popular as a hobby in recent years.
I imagine that would be quite noisy.
It can be. There are certain types of makers, certain types of anvils that produce more noise than others. So an anvil that's made completely out of steel that's been forged or cast has a high-pitched ring to it, which makes a lot of noise. But there are also anvils that are made out of cast iron that have a thud when you hit them, and so they're not nearly as noisy.
Okay, you're working in 18th century forge, so which one do you have?
We have a forged steel anvil.
So it's noisy.
So it is rather noisy. And it's interesting to see this large industrial building in the heart of what you'd think of as a residential area in the capital city of Williamsburg. The shop is literally right off the main street behind the workman's house.
What question or questions do you get mostly?
Well, the first obvious questions are about what's happening right at the moment. What's he working on? What is that thing over there? And then the nature of question has changed over the years. The questions we used to get all the time related to horseshoes because most people associated horseshoeing with blacksmith's work. Recent Hollywood releases have changed the nature of the question. They show blacksmiths doing different activities. Those that appeal to kids primarily involve work on weapons. Mm-hmm. So the biggest question we're getting nowadays is about sword making.
Are you making swords?
We don't currently. Most of our work relates to the peacetime operation of a blacksmith shop. But the Anderson shop here at Colonial Williamsburg was an armory during the Revolutionary War, and so swords were part of the mix. As we look to the future, we're looking at talking more and more about the war effort, and we'll hopefully be including gun work and sword work in that.
Mm-hmm. As people stand there and watch you, do they ever comment on the dreadful conditions, the heat, the sweat, the dirt, the things you're whacking at with your anvil?
Yes, they often comment on the physical nature of the work, especially in either extreme. When it's really, really hot, they always comment that they bet we like the winter time. wintertime has its own challenges. You know, we have a fire there, and most people think that the fire would heat up the entire building, but most of the heat goes right up the chimney. So in the wintertime, it's extremely cold in the shop. In the summertime, it's really hot. Spring and fall are really the best times to do the work.
You said it's really cold. Does that change the nature of the metal you're working on?
It does. When the temperatures drop well below freezing, the anvils get cold at night. And so the next day when we come into work, of course, we're pulling hot iron out of the fire and into a room that might be 30 or 35 degrees and holding it against an anvil that might be 25 degrees. The anvil acts as a heat sink and draws the heat out of the iron. You have to work a little more quickly in the winter than you do in the summer.
Okay. What attracted you to blacksmithing?
I had a chance to try blacksmith's work when I was in high school, and I fell in love with it immediately. And I began working for the smith that taught the first class that that I took, and in the meantime set up my own workshop. So I ran a business as a blacksmith right out of high school. My real interest was in historical restoration work. I loved early technology. I loved the early style of American ironwork. I loved the utilitarian nature of the objects that were being made. And I focused primarily on restoration ironwork. I worked for building contractors in my home that were restoring old buildings. Through that interest in historical ironwork, I met up with smiths that work here in Williamsburg and joined the crew here back in the early 1980s.
Mm-hmm. You said that you in high school, and then you said the man who taught. Was there a class, a high school class?
The class actually was in a museum, a small county-run museum. They were looking for volunteers in the museum, and one of the ways they attracted people was to teach classes. Mm-hmm. And in exchange for the class, then, you were to volunteer in the museum several days a month. And I, as I say, I took the class. I enjoyed it immensely. They had no problems encouraging me to volunteer within the shop. And then once I got my own set up, you know, I was work on I'd go to school during the day. I'd work on my homework in the evening. Weekends and holidays, I was in the shop hammering away.
What were some of the things you made for the builders?
As buildings were being restored, often what would happen is the contractor would find an original hinge or original set of hinges. And then the people that owned the house would want other hardware made to match the original so that all the hinges within the house would be similar in style. Mm-hmm. Hinges, door latches, also at that time in the late 1970s, wood stoves and fireplaces were making a comeback. And I did a lot of fireplace equipment. So it was primarily building hardware, fireplace equipment, and then occasionally odd tools or objects like that.
I don't mean to get too personal in your life, but can a guy make a living like that?
You can. It's hard to break into the industry because it takes a long time to really develop the skills. You can make a living at it. You can make a good living if you're a good smith. It takes years to develop the skills, just like someone who's a musician wanting to break into that industry. It takes years and years of hard work to develop and refine your skills. And as long as you can support yourself during those learning years, the payoff comes later on.
Was there an apprentice in blacksmithing? Could you apprentice out?
In the 18th century, that was the case. That's the way most hand skills were taught. As a miner in your mid-teens, you would sign an indenture which binds you to a particular business until you turn 21. So for that 5 or 6 years, you work within the business, you learn the basics of the trade, you learn how to operate a business. Once you turn 21, then you're free to go out and earn wages. In the modern world, it's a little more complex than that. Federal labor laws that require payment of a minimum wage, limiting teenage access to industrial sites make it much more difficult to learn. So today, the trade is usually taught through craft schools who offer week-long or sometimes a little bit longer courses. And then you have to have the discipline to set up the shop and practice on your own.
So the five blacksmiths at Anderson Forge are all blacksmiths. There are no apprentices. There's no...
Well, we do have an apprenticeship within the shop also. It's one of the few formal opportunities for an apprenticeship. But typically, when I hire somebody into the shop, I look for somebody that already has a background in the trade. The training that we do then relates specifically to 18th century technology and 18th century form. So if I bring somebody into the shop who's already got a background in working with hot iron and fire so that they know the fundamentals, I can then realign their skills to 18th century forms.
Is it much different?
Much different from the period?
Yeah.
It is in that we're a museum, and so there are many distractions that go along with the learning. We have many guests that come into the shop, and we welcome them, but at the same time, it slows down the learning process.
Is it a popular place?
It's very popular, yes. We keep it popular by maintaining a very active shop. So we try to always have forge work going on. People really love seeing the fire, the hot iron, and then we use that to teach them more about American history.
And you left out the noise.
Noise, smoke, dirt, it's all there.
That's Colonial Williamsburg, past and present this time. Check history.org often. We'll post more for you to download and hear.